Question 65. Are not five sparrows sold for 2 farthings? Luke 12:6-7. Are not 5 sparrows sold for 2 farthings, and not one of them is forgotten before God? Fear not, therefore. Ye are of more value than many sparrows. Luke 12:24. How much more are ye better than fowls? The value system upon which God bases his evaluation of nature, mankind, life, and death is not as different from ours as it is simply larger, all-encompassing, and more complex. For example, we place a great deal of value upon the life of a man. God, for very different reasons more complex, places more value upon a man's death. Here, Christ asks, how much do you get for 5 sparrows? 1 cent? Yet not one of them is forgotten or abandoned of God. To God, you're worth flocks of sparrows. There are many ways to assimilate this information. Ecologically, we could place our needs above the animal kingdom. Spiritually, we may consider ourselves the most valued in creation. Mathematically, if one takes the economical data given in Scripture, and from that surmises that we're worth many sparrows, and if a flock had, say, 1,000 birds, we may deduce from that information that we're worth more than $2 to God. Okay, perhaps one can overanalyze, but all that Jesus was saying here was that there is no reason for us to fear our death if we realize our death would be of great value and importance to God. Here, Christ was foretelling the persecution and death of his disciples. He was encouraging them that God was watching over them and would not forget them at their deaths. The account in Luke mentions only forgetting, but look at the same account in Matthew 10:29-31. Are not 2 sparrows sold for 1 farthing? And one of them shall not fall on the ground without your Father. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear ye not, therefore. Ye are of more value than many sparrows. The term fall on the ground refers to their death. Without your Father speaks of God's knowledge. We see God witnessing and evaluating the death of man. One presupposes the acknowledgement of God at the death of a martyr, but the disciples obviously feared a lonely death without the Father, dying under the best conditions without the Father would be a horrible proposal. Jesus gave them comfort in this. When considering this concept, the idea of the omniscience of God becomes a factor. Some who believe that God knows everything could take little comfort in the words of Jesus here. When the subject of omniscience is debated, these scriptures are often cited. God knows how many hairs you have on your head, say they. Don't you think he knows everything? Actually, the scripture says that the hairs of your head are all numbered, as if each of them had their own serial number. It's not just that God knows how many. He knows which hair goes where. However, it is not what God knows that will interest the martyr, or the one being persecuted, or the one who stands seemingly alone for righteousness. It's not the fact that God knows everything that gives comfort when we suffer or when we are hurt for our faith. It is the fact that the death of a faithful one gains his interest that comforts us. How can one find comfort when asking, is God aware and concerned about my situation? And the glib answer comes back, sure, God knows everything. Jesus is not simply teaching that God knows everything. He's comforting his disciples in the fact that God has interest in their death. He cares for the death of sparrows. You're worth flocks of sparrows. Again, we come to the evaluation of death in the estimation of God. We must admit that we don't see things the same way he does. We should strive to understand the plan and strategy of life and death so that his way makes sense to us. If you approached a table where there were competitors in a golf match arguing their scores and you'd never heard of the game, you were assuming the high score would win, you may be surprised to hear them argue about their score, insisting that it was lower than it was counted. Until you understood that the idea was the lowest score wins the game of golf, you might not understand the discussion at all. When we approach the death of a loved one for whom we have prayed and seemingly are receiving no answer, or we read of the deaths of martyrs over history or the Holocaust, or we consider any of the deaths of those who cried out to God only to feel the cold, brassy heavens reflecting their anguish as their prayers go unheeded, we cannot understand. We cannot understand until we learn how the score is counted, how the evaluation is performed, until we see it from God's perspective. We need to ask God to reveal his ways to us, instead of expecting him to explain to us his actions or lack of intervention on our behalf. His ways are higher than ours. So says the prophet, "For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." We'll gain little from fitting God into our lives and trying to make his ways understandable by reducing him to terms such as all-knowing or all-caring, or by tritely offering to the suffering one sayings like "God knows best." We should aspire to learn his ways and change our understanding and the system of evaluation so that we see things the way he sees them. There are many things that we do not know. We will feel much shame and anguish when we find that we have wasted the valuable, shunned the best, ignored the important, and traded beauty for ashes, joy for sorrow, and his highest for life's mediocre. God places value on what we reject and sell for little. We do not understand his evaluation process or system. We prove this is true when we hold on to life with white-knuckled fervor and we claw and scratch our way into our graves while we wish for only one more moment of life. Our actions say there must be something we do not know. Why don't we realize that our deaths are our door? Our lives are our prison. We are in a world that hates our God, and we serve a God who views our death with hands folded, but with great interest when we belong to him. If God places a great deal of value in places and upon things that we do not, your death would certainly be one of them. While wishing to die would be unnatural, you may, if you begin to see things God's way, live in the strait in which the Apostle Paul found himself. According to my earnest expectation and my hope, whether it be by life or by death, for me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. For I'm in a strait betwixt two, having a desire to depart and to be with Christ, which is far better. Nonetheless, to abide in the flesh is more needful for you. Philippians 1:20. The difference in the way that God sees things and the way we see them is a problem. The gap needs to close between the two paradigms. When we read the Bible or the words of Christ or the prophets, they should make sense to us. We should understand what God is saying and why. We shouldn't have to ask God to explain himself to us. We should rather ask his help to change us, so that we understand him when he speaks or acts. He places value upon the death of a sparrow. Why? He watched this tiny bird from its beginning, He knew its parents and watched the death of its grandparents. He knows any sparrow's lineage back to the fifth day of creation, which is one day before our own. He fed it every mouthful of food, according to Christ, along with all the fowls of the earth. He watched Mama Sparrow lay and hatch her eggs, and he became acquainted with all her young as well. One day this sparrow went out to find food and was taken in a snare and placed in a cage with four others and placed on a noisy street in Jerusalem and sold, along with her four other captives, for 2 pennies. Jesus, pointing at them flailing and flopping and trying to escape the cage and illustrating the point that we do not evaluate life and death the way he does, questions, why such a price on his feathered friends? Do you see things the way God sees them? The evaluation of death is key. Are not 5 sparrows sold for 2 farthings?